It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, welcome. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Saturday. And my partner in turkey crime, Captain Mike Ward. Good morning.
Good morning, Sean. How you doing?
Man, we're doing good. Doing good. Lots to talk about. A lot of turkeys to talk about.
Oh, it is. You know, turkey season is in full bloom, and the weather finally is not cooperating, but is getting a little bit better than what it has been.
Well, that's not saying much.
You know, the only thing I can tell you about this whole season with the coronavirus and all that is my neighbor, my yard and my neighbor's yards are looking great.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
That's the one thing. That's the good news about this whole thing is that everybody is working in the yards and getting the yards straightened out and looking good.
Nice thing is turkey
season has not cooperated for me real well.
It's been weird. I want to talk about that. But, yeah, getting other projects done. I mean, get the yard work done. I've got about 8 acres of bean field already dissed and ready to go.
Mm-hmm, there you go.
And, you know, that's one thing we're talking about, too, is just the same way I think the turkeys are acting, you know, in planting soybeans right now is – We were in April and March.
Yeah.
You're looking at soil temps, looking at that. So if you want beans in the ground, it's happening now.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, we always talk about this in retrospect where people are like, oh, I want to do that, and they're asking us in July about this. Y'all, I'm putting beans in the ground now. Hopefully before the next show, I'll have them in the ground and sprayed and ready to roll.
Well, I mean, with the weather the way it is right now, it's time to do it. We're almost in summertime pattern. It is unbelievable. I mean, typically, you know, we talk about this all the time. I like turkey hunting all day long.
Yes, you do.
You know, I go in the morning, and then I may take a break in the middle of the day or may not, but I may stay with them all day long. But between the 90-degree weather and the bull gnats, I've been coming out about 12 o'clock, and I've been going fishing the rest of the day.
I haven't done
that in several years. Normally, I'm in there all day long. Now, when it gets down around the last couple of weeks of the season, it starts getting hot in April, then I start maybe bass fishing in the afternoon some. But right now, I'm bass fishing in the afternoons. It's just too hot to stay there all day.
Well, it's been been lucky for us, and we talked about last week. I stayed out of the river swamp, stayed on the farm, and – knock on wood, I know you say they're coming.
The bull gnats are coming.
We still have these couple little places on the farm where our farm and my in-law's farm that we don't have the issue. You know, but I did hear the other day, this last week, that maybe the bull gnats have reduced some because they go through a cycle. You know, and usually that doesn't end till after turkey season ends. You'll go back in May, they won't be bad. Maybe they're far enough ahead that they are
because they started about 2 to 3 weeks before turkey season, so it should be on a downturn now.
So that's what we're hoping.
But the bull gnats are about like the hogs.
Yeah.
You may not have them now, but they coming.
Yes, that's
you
right.
You know, it's just a
two things we don't have
time
on the farm right now. Knock on wood, we keep it that way.
You have some on one of the farm, one or two.
Yeah, one or two here. I have way more bears than I do hogs.
Yeah,
and I like to keep it that way.
But they coming.
Yeah, they are. All right, and on today's show, we'll talk about that. I mean, turkey report wise,
I didn't do any good. Had a great hunt. I'll tell you the hunt real quick because it is an interesting hunt. So I go way back in the woods, back around some beautiful hardwoods where there's always turkeys back there. I heard one turkey gobble way off, a mile off. And it's breaking daylight, and I miss getting time where you got to go do something, you know. So I told my grandson, I said, let's just go behind this green field and just sit up, because it's usually turkeys always around there, you know, and we ain't heard nothing. So we go and sit up and get a blind all set up, get a chair set up, and we sit down. I cluck one time. Yep, a couple times, and both of us look at each other and said, was that drumming I just heard? And I just clucked again, and yep, real low, and I mean, I'm talking about 2 minutes after we're there. And two of them come up, and anyway, comes up on my side, and I want him to shoot them. Mm-hmm. And I could have shot them, but I warned them to come on around and let him shoot them. Well, they walked on away, and anyway, that was the end of that hunt. Well, we fooled with them for about 3 more hours, but,
yeah, the
but that was the end of that hunt, basically. So what about you?
Well, I finally had to break down being, you know, the guy that can only hunt Saturday and Sunday mornings, had good hunts.
Yeah.
But they made the mistake of beating me, staying with their ladies all day, but letting me hear where they were roosted. So I had a breakdown this week and went in and got in the bedroom and waited one out.
In the afternoon?
And no goblin, even though my birds will gobble in the afternoon sometimes, no goblin, but same thing. Heard him drumming about 6:05 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
He made a mistake and came on in. So finally get the monkey off my back.
Awesome. That's a good turkey, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. You and I talked about it earlier.
Great
he's,
beard.
Yeah. Decent bird.
A 3-year-old turkey. A good turkey.
I got one that's still in my brain. We got a big boy to kill, but good season so far. And talking turkeys, we're going to do it this hour. And guest in studio, Dude Marston has joined us on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Not only did he show up, first of all, thank you, but you brought boxes of turkey calls.
Well, I've been fooling with this a long time, Sean, about 50 years, if you want to know the truth. And I just got a kind of a history of the turkey calls going way back. And my really interesting information would be how the diaphragm call came about.
And when people who aren't turkey hunters like us, though, that's the ones we put in our mouth, y'all.
That's
correct. Those calls. The mouth calls there. First of all, I got to ask you before we get into that. So you have about 50 years of messing with this. When did you first start calling on a turkey call of any sort?
I came back to Mobile in 65. I was in dental school for 4 years. Came back to Mobile in 65, and that's kind of when I got started.
So
1965 till, and really those first few years I didn't know much. I had some friends who, up until that time, I'd been hunting in the Delta, and my dad had a bird dog. We hunted with him. He always in a dove club. We always did something with my dad. He was a good hunter.
Right.
And
but turkeys weren't.
I had no knowledge of that. The woods are just foreign to me. So I had some friends who are encouraging me to get involved. And finally, I went to a club with this guy. And in the fall that year, I killed a young gobbler with him calling. So that was my first experience.
And you were hooked at that point?
Well, I guess I was because I've been hooked ever since.
And that was in the fall.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I was going to talk to you about is the development of the mouth call was important because the fall hunting, the fall turkey hunting went with the deer season. And when you get a box call or one of these other calls, you can't do that key-key run that those young turkeys do. And that's when the mouth call really came to be, I thought. I mean, I kind of
so it was
identified
driven.
With that.
It was driven because people wanted to be able to key-key.
That's correct.
Well, it makes sense because, that's the way you could do it. But who designed – I mean, we look at all these mouth calls now. Let's go to the store. There's racks and racks of them. But you're talking about 65.
Yeah. There was one guy making mouth calls.
One guy.
His name was Jack Davis. He worked at BLP. He was a
BLP Paints.
BLP Paint on the store on Dolphin Street, just I guess, east of Royal. The BLP store was there. He was a good turkey hunter, and His secret was a way to stamp these lead frames out of this sheet of lead. And they made not a horseshoe, but a kind of an oval shape. And I got these people that I was going with had started buying his calls. In fact, I got a couple of them here. Too bad we aren't on TV.
Well, we'll take some pictures. We're going to take some pictures, put them
anyway,
on social media.
So I said, man, I need to learn about this. So I said, where? So I go to his house. He lived down towards Brookley Field. And I go in there in the afternoon, and I said, man, I don't know anything about this turkey hunt, but I want to see how you do. So he and his wife were sitting at the dining room table making turkey calls, and they were 50 cents each. And I don't know how many they made a night, but they made a lot, and they used that lead frame. That was his secret, because nobody up until then had come up with a good idea how to make a diaphragm call. And he was sitting there he told me he used all kind of rubber stuff to begin with. He used rubber gloves. He took pieces of that. He used balloons. But anyway, his secret was, I guess you know where I'm going.
I do. Yeah.
He used the condoms.
That's right.
Yeah. And he and his wife, he'd cut them up in little pieces, and they would use this tape, kind of a adhesive tape, and he would stretch that tape and put that little piece of latex on there and then fold it over that metal frame. And you always knew which side was up because the metal frame was down. You could feel it. I mean, so if you went to later on in some of the years, because I started making them too, because after I saw him, then you could reuse these lead frames. Yeah. You could reuse them. You could tear them apart and put you a new piece of latex in there and fix. So anyway, I learned how to do that, and you'd have to make three calls to get one good one out of it, because you got to lay that latex in there. It has to be just right. You know, it's not too tight and not loose. And then you had a little bit of flexibility there where you can horseshoe it a little bit just to kind of tune it up a little bit. But that's the way frames were made. Jack Davis was a pioneer in that field.
And that's, I mean, y'all, we're talking about the history of you stopping by now and you're buying, you know, a widow cut or a double stack or anything like that. This is all started with these mouth calls. Now, I think some of the interesting things, other than what must have been thought of the person at the pharmacy when somebody came in and routinely bought big boxes of condoms.
You're like, my
goodness, son.
You look pretty strong, but I don't know if you're that good a guy.
But on top of that, you keep mentioning the metal we're talking about, and these frames are lead.
Lead frames.
And you're putting these in your mouth.
And I did it for 30 years, I guess, and so far I'm still around. It didn't kill me. But, and then, of course, after a while, they started using aluminum and aluminum frames, and they started making calls. Like I went to McCoy Outdoor the other day, like you said, and the whole wall is full of turkey calls from all these different people.
You're talking about when somebody listening to this is sitting at their kitchen table making them.
That's right, 1965. Because I was just out of dental school and just back in Mobile, just trying to get something going. But let me tell you some more about that, because this guy from Coffeyville, Alabama, got hold of these lead frames.
This might be a name y'all have heard before.
You know who I'm talking about,
oh, yes.
Right?
There's a bridge name for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, on 43.
Right? Gradually, yeah.
But anyway, he started using Jack Davis frames and started making his own calls or using some of Jack's information. And in 1970, I'm down at the Admiral Sims Ballroom, first year they had a turkey calling contest that I remember that I went to, and Ben Rogers Lee won that turkey calling contest, and it's on that.
Yeah, we're gonna get a recording.
I got it.
Yeah, we're gonna try to get these recordings.
So I'm sitting there watching him, and he has great calls. He was really good. Of course, you know what happened. He took turkey calling mainstream. You know, and all his show, he won 70 and 73, 74, 80. He won that contest 4 or 5 years in a row. I mean, skip maybe a year here. But then he went all over the country, you know, with his show, calling and talking. He's kind of reminded me of Jerry Clower for a while. You know, he's
interesting. Oh, he was entertaining.
Yeah.
And he had the Southern drawl.
Oh,
that was unbelievable.
He did. I remember one time he said, turkeys can't count. You don't have to yelp three times or four times. You said turkeys can't count.
You know, but we're talking about the evolution of turkey calls, but the evolution of turkey calling. Dude, you're on, and if you're just joining us, talking to Dude Marston, we're talking about the history of turkey calls from right here. You started thinking Ben Rogers Lee, but the history precedes that. Ben Rogers Lee used these frames from Jack Davis.
Jack Davis, that's correct.
So he takes this mainstream. But the calling has changed, too, because you talk about the three yelps. So, my father, when I first started, you yelp three times, and then you basically put a call up and don't look at it again for a couple hours. Well, people don't have to go farther than hunting now or watching a video. People calling, cutting, I'm doing stuff that nobody was doing back then.
They have show calls now. I mean, it's ridiculous what they do now. But he was really good, though.
He was very entertaining.
Entertaining, too.
Oh,
he was.
And he had several cassette tapes out.
Oh, yeah.
And when I'd go turkey hunting, I'd put that cassette tape in every time I went turkey hunting, and I'd listen to his tapes because I thought, you know, I'd get something else out of it that I didn't know. But one of the stories he told all the time was on that tape was that he'd go across that barbed wire fence, and that barbed wire fence went, and that old turkey gobbled, you know. So he sat there with that fence a couple of times, you know.
He was entertaining. When he won that contest that year, I went to talk to him afterwards, and he showed me his call. It was a lead frame, but he had modified it a little bit, and it was a lot bigger than the ones I've seen. Jack Davis made three calls, small, medium, and large.
Just for the size of somebody's mouth?
Yeah. For whatever fits your mouth better. But he had altered that thing. It was really big. I don't know how he did it. But anyway, he bought somehow. There's a little fuzzy here what happened, but anyway, he bought that press, or either Jack Davis gave it to him or something. He bought that press to stamp those lead frames out of that sheet of lead, and he went to selling turkey calls with lead frames. That was for the first, I don't know, 10 years, 10, 5 or 10 years, he sold those lead frame turkey calls. And then he developed that shop up in Coffeyville, and they made all kind of calls up there. Then he went to box calls, and he had a staff in there making all kind of calls. But he used that lead frame for a long time.
I want to talk more about that. We're going to run the break and come back and talk more about this. Our guest for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, Dude Marsden. We're talking about the history of these mouth calls. Some names like Ben Rogers Lee, you know. Some names that might be brand new to you, like Jack Davis. We're coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along in this Saturday morning. And we'll be putting some pictures up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, because our guest in studio, Dude Marsden, has brought not only some great stories, but some great stuff to look at. And I want you all to be able to check it out. Now, we've been talking about these early frames here that Jack Davis, right here in Mobile, was making these at the kitchen table.
That's correct.
So
I watched him make them. And, he and his wife sitting there putting them together, 50 cents each.
And to think about what that's become, because then you said
go. I was in 1965. I went to his house to pick up a call. I was just got back to Mobile from dental school, and I was interested in learning something about the woods, and I had some friends that were calling turkeys. And they were fall hunting at the time. I think I mentioned that earlier.
Right. And I'm going to get you a little closer to that mic, too.
And anyway, the fall turkeys, you had to imitate a young gobbler. And that key run that they use now for the show calls was what they could do on the mouth call that you couldn't do on a box call. And that was one of the early signs of these things being very successful, because everybody I knew was crazy about killing fall turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And I really shouldn't have done it. You wouldn't do it now, but it was a big part of the hunting season at that time.
My grandfather, I don't know if I ever had a spring turkey hunting story from him. They were all fall turkey hunting.
That was a thing back in the day, fall turkey hunting as much or more than the spring turkey hunting. But a lot of people are thinking, you know, Jack Davis, it seems like I may have heard that name before, you know, with the older people, not any of the young folks like Sean.
You have to be pretty old.
Yeah, but Jack Davis, he was pretty inventive. He made a shrimp net that I sold in my store years ago, but it was the best shrimp net that you could buy. It was a 16-foot, and it didn't have a lead line. It had a lead line, but it didn't have the tickle chain out in front of it. And, man, it would catch shrimp. It was the finest thing. So he made all kinds of stuff. He made, as Dude was telling us earlier, about he invented the dip to go on the shrimp nets. I mean, he did all kinds of stuff. He was pretty smart.
Sounds like a Renaissance man here for the outdoors.
Yeah. He was. I went to his take your net, once you use it a few times, you take it to him, well, after a season, and before you start the next season, because they didn't have, you can't buy any bait back in those years. You know, you had to catch everything.
Right.
If
that's
you
right.
wanted any bait, you had to go catch it yourself. So everybody had a 16-foot trawl, and he had a backyard. He had a 55-gallon drum out there and a big pine tree over it, and he had a rope up at the top of the pine tree, and he'd tie your net up into the top of the pine tree and then lower it down into that 55-gallon drum of his net dip that BLP made. I'm not sure if he didn't probably fabricate that too, but it had a creosote smell to it. And then he'd pull the net back out of the dip and let it drip for about 30 minutes and dry out a little bit, and then you could take it home.
Yeah.
But you do that every year. It saved your net.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's pretty ingenuitive.
Yeah, for sure. And talking about, you know, been doing the news break there, looking at the different calls. We got mouth calls. But you also brought some box calls. One special, too, you said here, because we were talking about Ben Rogers Lee, you brought out a unfinished box call. We're going to get a picture of this up on the Facebook page. Now, tell me the story about this one.
Well, I, you know, he died in 91.
Mm-hmm.
tragic accident. Didn't he hit that bridge, bud?
He hit the bridge in McIntosh.
Well, he had his store operating in Coffeyville. They were making calls day and night over there, and a lot of mouth calls, too, but they were into box calls. And anyway, a friend of mine that was over there, they were clearing out the store. He had friendship in some way there. And he brought me this, and he said this is one of the last calls he made, and it's unfinished. And the paddle is not on it, but you can. I brought a paddle. You can put it together yourself.
So, here so that's an unfinished. That was something that he was working on when he died.
When he died, 1991. That's correct.
You had another box call you brought out as well. Tell me the story behind this one. This is a one of a kind, right?
You talking about this antique?
Yeah. The antique, yes.
This was belonged to my dad, and I think it was in the 50s. He killed a turkey up in North Baldwin, and his guide at the time was using this call, and in addition to taking the turkey home, he took the call home, too.
Two
so
for
I
one.
I don't know how he did it, whether he paid him something for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's cash involved.
But, I mean, the guy said it was handed down to him, so I'm assuming this call is over 100 years old. I can't make a good sound out of it. But it's an interesting piece that I've had for, whatever, 60 years or so.
You seem you probably where I'll be because I just see a little bit of your collection. I got some boxes of them, and I got things my wife knows about and doesn't know about. If she listened this morning, I'll be in trouble. I got some of them hidden away in the house. I got a collection of them.
Sean, who was the first one to come up with a box?
Box call? Henry Gibson. Gibson, yeah, the Gibson call, and that's worth a whole other discussion. But 1897.
Yeah.
Henry Gibson comes home from the Civil War. He's in Arkansas, Dardanelle, Arkansas, and gets this idea for how to have two pieces of wood run across each other, one being resonant, one being hard, and make this noise. It sounds like a yelp. And he patents it with the U.S. Patent Office in 1897. And it's a Gibson call. You can look around if you'll go to eBay, probably somewhere like that, because Will Primos had a copy or had one of the original Gibson calls and had it copied to the letter. And they issued some. National Wild Turkey Federation put some out as well. Gibson calls. Yeah, 1897.
Hmm. Unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, the history. I like history because that's art and that's history and that's utilitarian at the same time. Turkey calls check all those boxes.
Yeah. There's been a bunch of different calls made. Some of these calls they call box calls now, those little push button things. I don't know. They call that a box call I've got a few of those in here. I've got one a little unusual at Winky Hicks. You remember him?
Yeah, Winky. Yeah.
Now, let's tell folks about Winky Hicks. Yeah, Grove Hill area.
Grove Hill. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, musician.
He's a turkey musician.
He's a banjo player, really good, too. I've heard him play, and I've heard him. And I went to his shop in, it's not in Grove Hill, it's in Whatley, Alabama.
Whatley, that's right.
Yeah.
And I got his call here. I'll show it to you in a minute. But anyway, I heard about him. I went to his shop. He also made mandolins for Nashville. He's really talented.
Man, having that kind of talent.
Yeah. But anyway, his call is a slate call and a push button call, and I've got it right here. And then you can do anything you want on it, and it really sounds pretty good. I've got one here, but I've used it before, and it will call a turkey. I've tried it. And so I've got one of his unusual calls. I've got a lot of Lynch calls there. I like them probably as good as any.
Now, dude, can you give us a rough estimate of how many turkey calls you own, sir?
I couldn't tell you. only brought a few. I don't know what to do with all these things. I got boxes of them. And, you know, every now and then I find something a little different. I don't go buy anything anymore because I've got enough. In fact, I started making my own box calls.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I got some here I made, too. I copied the Lynch. And
now this is talent to engage in something that is a mechanical structure. You know, that's what it is. I mean, you're looking at with people who aren't familiar with this, box calls, you got moving parts, and that's a turkey call with moving parts.
I don't know who. I guess Lynch started Lynch box calls,
right? And they all come off of there's a bunch of different people that I think just like dude was telling us about how Jack Davis started, and then here come improvements and improvements and improvements. The Gibson design, 1897, that patent was fairly basic, and Lynch and so many others took that design and made it better. American ingenuity. We see it today in technology. Back then, it was for a box call.
Yeah. Well, I know Lynch calls now. Alan Jenkins makes Lynch calls and been making them for at least 40 years or more, because Bill Nunnery and Alan Jenkins were really good friends. They hunted together a bunch, and me and Alan and Bill went turkey hunting one time together, but he makes the Lynch calls now. And okay. I assume he still does. You know,
hey, I
haven't talked
there.
To him in a long time.
Yeah, you see him in stores. It's one of my many weaknesses, the box call. It's always in my vest, but not always in my hand.
Well, you need both, don't you?
Because you got to have everything.
If you use a box call, then you got both hands using that. If that turkey gets too close, you better have something in your mouth, because you can't move your hands at that point.
That's right. Unless you're behind in a blind, you know. And I usually always, you know, and that can be controversial too, whether you're in a blind. I'm talking about just a ground blind you stick up in front of you. I use that most all the time. I like to be hid so I can use a slate call or whatever, but also hunting with my grandson. He does nod off and move his head or whatever.
How old is his grandson?
He's 13.
Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old grandson I'm getting ready to take this weekend. He's into this stuff, too. I'd like to get him a turkey if I can.
That's a...
Well, you will.
Yeah, it's a good... We're all having fun in this conversation. Y'all's grandchildren, my daughter's 14, and this is the first year that... And we still carry the blind, but this first year she sat out without a blind. It's been a big transition in doing that, and I don't know, she gets pretty excited.
Well, you're talking about a tent.
Now, when she first started, when she was young, I had to set up like a permanent tent blind because she was a jumping bean. She was a 7-year-old jumping bean. But we moved here, you know, to a regular, like a call a half blind, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm using now.
We use the same thing. You and I hunt together.
Well, like I had to use the house blind for
no, no.
A
I'm
while.
Talking about a half blind, like a little. Yeah, so. Still use that and let you use those other calls. But now, we're sitting out in the wide open now. That's been a different story. I want to talk more about kind of your history in turkey hunting as well and what you see from 65 on. I'd like to get your perspective, like to get Mike's. You know, a lot of people are saying, what happened to our turkeys? We've had Chuck Sykes on a couple times. We've done hours on this, on the biology of it, some of the things we're trying to look at in the state. And he points out that it is site-specific. Some areas aren't seeing as big an impact as others. Some areas have a normal turkey population. Some are going, where my turkey's gone. But in your experience and hunting, have you mostly hunted in South Alabama, or what parts of the state have you hunted?
Yeah, a few times up at near Lake Martin, but mostly in Clark County.
Okay. So what have you watched over the years?
Well, I can't tell you the exact date, but I saw the first pig showed up on our property, and I guess it's been 15 or 20 years ago. And I have to say, I think the turkey population fell with the pig population growth.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like that to me. We used to have lots of turkeys, and our turkeys now are not near as many as it used to be.
And that lines up with when the hogs showed
that's
up.
That's my theory. That's my theory. I've talked to other people about similar things in our area. Ernest Ladd's one of them. He believes the same thing.
Well, I don't think it can help them. I mean, the hogs eat, their omnivores eat anything they come across, and if they come across a turkey nest.
I think it's possible. I don't know.
Oh, I think they will. I mean, they've done
say they'll eat anything.
They will eat anything.
If it's there and it doesn't eat them, they'll eat it. So
that's my theory. I don't know if that's everybody else's or if it's scientific or what. It's just me, what I've observed over the years, and our turkey population has definitely diminished.
So in y'all's area, it has diminished. And we talk about this, too, that, you know, you could have hogs impacting you at your place, and then somebody 10 miles down the road, it's more coons and possums hitting nests or whatever. You know, it's a combination of things. But people are trying to figure out why. You know, one of the things, too, that Chuck said, and that's why they moved the season dates this year, is they were finding there were hens that never got bred on some properties. And not just that we were losing nests, that there were hens that never got bred. And that's why they figured, let's move it off just 1 week. Every day, more chances for those hens to get bred. Now, I'm sure there's some properties that's not an issue, but places they tested, they did have that problem.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I can understand
where
you only have a couple of gobblers and maybe 40 hens, you know?
Yeah.
And if you go and kill those couple of gobblers pretty quick in the season, and there's no more gobblers around, you got all those hens, I can see that happening.
You know, what's good about the way they manage is he said they're going to look at this for, what do you say, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
And then if that doesn't make a change, then we'll go back to – he said he's just trying to do something to address these issues. He can do that and have better impact than – what we can do as landowners is take it, you know, trapping, killing hogs, trapping, killing coons and possums, doing those things, doing burns, doing habitat work. But he said at a state level, he can't come on your property and do that. He can't go everywhere. He said, but I can try to see to make sure the most number of hens get bred. So maybe that turns things
around.
And I
don't doubt, dude, that you might be right about the hogs. I mean,
I don't know.
Makes sense.
And I know this. I mean, I've got quite a few friends that have game fences. And where they don't have, where they trapping coyotes and coons and everything else, but they don't have any hogs in those fences. And every one of those fences I know are loaded with turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, the turkeys flourish inside game fences.
That's pretty conclusive to me.
Yeah.
We don't have fence. We don't fence. But I don't know.
It's a good but I'm sure there's a scientist out there that will disagree. I'm not saying it's perfect science. But there is some scientific basis if you could get similar land in an area and have a high fence. In this case, it's not inclusive. It's exclusive, right? It's not about keeping the critters in. It keeps those critters you don't want out being hogs. And I've followed Mike around up in that country enough to know that it is really something. The places I've been to with you, Mike, that were high fence or right next to high fence properties, you know, that were in that area.
Yeah.
The turkey numbers up there, you know, I hunted some in the 90s in the Black Belt, and turkey hunting was good. It's okay. I mean, everywhere in the 90s was pretty good.
Yeah.
But what I saw when it started to diminish down here and Washington County where I hunt in those places and then going up with you, it was night and day.
Yeah.
Y'all's turkeys were just population was strong as could be.
Yeah, and I want to tell you, it may be going down a little bit. We're having a lot of hog issues up there right
now. Yeah, you now have the hog issue. Yeah,
we now have a real serious hog issue, and it may be diminishing a little bit up there where I'm at right now.
All right.
Possible? Don't know.
I'm going to set this smoke grenade off, and we're going to go to the break and come back. Speaking of things that are spreading, Mike and I have gotten an in-depth discussion last week about, the bull gnats and their migration to new places. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
All right, come back. We'll talk more about this. Our guest, Duke Marston, on FM Talk 106. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Glad to have our guest, Duke Marston, in the studio and talking about all good things and then some bad things. Talk about turkey calls and the history of turkey calls, but somehow, as always, it's been the last month or so it turns into bull gnat chat.
Yeah. It's bad, too.
Although I'm hearing some reports right now that it's getting a little bit better.
Well, in some places it's better, but some places it's probably worse. Not, you know? 2 weeks ago I was fishing on a lake up there and they were just, you know, everywhere.
Right.
But we had the Bug Spray. We had the Buggins Natural, and we were okay. But the other people that was fishing in the lake,
you told me they're about to jump out the boat.
They were hollering, screaming, and yelling. They was killing them. But then I was up there this weekend. I was in the woods, and they bothered us, you know, the bull gnats were. But I went on that lake and fished, and I just had one or two come around and just, you know, hit me a little bit and go off. But I don't know whether they're kind of leaving that area. I don't know. But normally the bull gnats come
through
for about 3 weeks, normally 3 to 4 weeks.
I think that's their life cycle, actually.
Yeah, and then they kind of go away. Dude, what can you tell us about the bull gnats?
All I know is I don't like them.
I second that.
I think they hatch, and they go through a 2 or 3 week cycle, and then they're gone. Whatever happens to them, they're gone. And that's when you can go back to turkey hunting, as far as I'm concerned. But I did buy a head net this year, which really made it big difference for me.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed finally got some bull gnat turkey hunting done. But other than that, most of the years I'd just go home. I couldn't stand them.
Yeah.
I got one day I was with a friend. He put me out and he said, I'll meet you back. I'll pick you up at such and such a time. And I thought, daylight. And it was beautiful morning. And then all of a sudden the sun came up, and I'm standing in the road waiting on a turkey to answer or gobble or something, and all of a sudden these bull gnats showed up, and I'm thinking, he's going to pick me up at 10 o'clock, and I'm going to have to stand here till 10 o'clock. And I started walking back to the camp, and it was about a mile. It was more than a mile. It was maybe 2 miles. And by the time I got back to that camp, I had whelps and bites and everything, top of everything. And I walked in, somebody said, "You look like you've been shot with 9 shots."
Yeah, you feel like it too. But I did tell you something that will work during the break that we sell at Mike Ward's Liberty Safes, and that's Buggins Natural. Now, it works. I've sold it to all my buddies, and they all come back and buy it because it works. It's the only thing that we found. Sean uses it.
Yep.
And
it works.
Is it a spray or is it a
spray? It's a spray. You spray it all around your head, your hat, your neck, everything.
Yeah. Smells like vanilla or something like that.
Yeah. And
smells pretty good.
About every 45 minutes, you got to reapply it again.
Yeah.
But it works. And it's the only thing that we found that will keep them off of you where you're able to hunt. Now, once you're in the woods and you're sitting down, turkey hunting in the shade, the gnats don't bother me.
They're a little better in the out of, you get in the opening or down a road or something.
They will absolutely eat you up. Yeah.
Well, Sean, I hope you keep some for next year. Yeah, I think I think the season's gone on bull gnats.
No, it's not. The bull gnats are still out.
We'll see. I'll let you know this weekend.
Yeah, that's good. So you're going to get out and get after them. You have a grandson going with you.
That's correct.
That's the best thing.
Yeah, he's really. Got some hunting instincts that are really almost unnatural. He's just going to be really fun to be with.
You got a candidate then.
I got a real good candidate. Yeah, I've killed a couple of. He's killed a couple of deer with me, and so now we advance to the turkey call, season. And I've got him calling. I practiced him the other night. And I said, "Man, you're natural."
Would you start him on? What kind of call?
A box.
A box.
I think it may have been one I made or one I had. I don't know. I've got so many. But anyway, I said, this is rhythm, man. It's the rhythm. Don't worry about exactly what the sound is, but get the rhythm right first. And next thing I know, I'm telling you, man, he's good. He's really good.
Yeah. Well, they got an ear. You get the right kid that has an ear for it. They can recreate it. Although, you know, we've gotten this discussion many times. I'm in complete agreement. Rhythm is key. The actual pitch, within reason. You sit in the woods, you listen to four or five hens call, and they sound four or five different ways.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. I've been with people with a mouth call that they wanted to do the calling that I'm thinking, oh, my God. That's the worst sound of stuff I ever heard in my life.
Same thing.
Turkey comes up and we kill it.
That's right.
I'm thinking,
it doesn't matter what you think unless you're in a competition.
Right? It's just terrible. You know?
I've heard it. Practicing, and I said, "Darn, that sounds like a dog barking. That doesn't sound like a turkey at all." But you know what? Those guys, those lad friends of mine, man, they kill turkeys all the time with those dog barking calls they have.
That's the only judge you're worried about, right? In the woods, is what that gobbler thinks.
I'm being a little. I shouldn't say that. They make great calls. In fact, I learn something from them all the time. I hang around with Ernest Ladd, and he's always giving me some clues on turkey hunting and call making and all that kind of stuff. They still use the lead frames.
Really?
Yeah.
That's old school there.
Yeah. Boy, they wouldn't let you do that anymore. They wouldn't. I don't think you could sell them in the store with lead, I don't think, anymore now. Years ago, I guess you could.
Well, Ben Rogers Lee sold a lot.
Oh, I know he did back then, but I don't know that they would let you do that now.
I don't know either. I don't worry about it.
You know what? I wonder if looking at these diaphragm calls in here, these mouth yelpers in here, and the other calls you have compared to today, I wonder if we're more disposable in everything today, and the same things with turkey calls. People buy, you know, you can go, like you talked about, you're in McCoy's, you got a rack full of yelpers.
Yeah.
People buy this one, that one. That one doesn't work. Throw that away. Get that away. Here you come in with just some of your collection, boxes of stuff you've held on to, because I imagine the labor it takes to make something like that makes it something worth holding on to.
Yeah. I tried to copy some. I wished I didn't bring any, but I copied some of those, that Lynch call. And I've got a little shop out in the garage, and I do a little woodworking then.
Well, I was fixing to ask you, what's it take to give me basic equipment you use to make your own box call?
Well, first of all, you got to get some good mahogany.
Okay.
And the paddle is the easiest thing to make because it's just flat on one side and curving. You need some kind of sanding machine and some glue, put it all together. But I copied those.
He's making it sound too. Come on. You just get some glue and you sand it.
I made some good calls.
It's not that easy. It can't be that easy.
If you hand me back sometime, Sean, I'll bring some calls back.
Okay. That's great that you're making, but you're doing that at a shop there at your house.
It was fun just trying to copy that Lynch call. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got three or four of them. In fact, I was worried one of them, I cracked the paddle on it the other, and I had to glue it back, and it, I thought it was going to break again. So I called Lynch, and I got to send me another one. That 101 is the one I like. Well, they sent me one with a walnut striker. And I said, that doesn't sound right. I want the mahogany striker, and I went back and forth with them two or three times trying to get the right thing. And anyway, it's, you know, you tune those with that little screw on the end of it. You
right.
know how you mm-hmm. tune them, right?
Right.
And then you can work on the striking edge too, and work on it, because you can take some sandpaper and knock it down a little bit if it isn't just right. You can fool around with them and make them better.
Well, somebody like you that's good with them, I've been amazed. It is the last call I go to. As God is my witness, it's the last. It's always in my vest, but last I go to. But I've seen days and seen people use them. Turkey won't gobble to anything else. And somebody pull out that box call and make that bird fire off.
It's got a great call to it, I think, too. And it's loud enough where you can stretch it out and, you know, get as far away as you
Windy day, you can carry with that, can't you?
You really can.
Well, you've come through a lot of evolution in turkey hunting through the years.
50 years, Mike.
Yeah. Well, and when you started, you said you were fall turkey hunting mainly.
That's correct.
You didn't spring turkey hunting. When you started,
mostly fall in early years, and then a little spring too, because you couldn't get by without going in the spring.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of
spoken like
hunting.
A true turkey hunter.
Yeah,
I mean, I was killing a gobbler every year for Thanksgiving.
Right,
I mean, just go. It's time for we get ready for Thanksgiving dinner, and. I think I took him out a few times.
He's talking about his son is in studio, Cam Marston, sitting in here with us.
I took him out and said, we need a turkey for Thanksgiving. Let's go get one. So that's fall turkey hunt. I mean,
how many counties still have?
Those young gobblers, they're so easy to kill. They really shouldn't be doing it, really.
How many counties still? Is it three or four counties still have fall season in the state?
Yeah, three or four that I know of.
It's only a few days even then. It's only like maybe a week.
And it was,
they changed it up. I don't fall turkey, and I don't keep up with it anymore.
My grandfather's generation, my grandfather, that's when you turkey. When I told him I was in his later years, I had turkey out in the spring, he said, why?
Yeah.
Because he said, it's hot out there and there's work to be done on the farm. I said, well, sir, they're gobbling. I kill them in the fall.
But things have changed a bunch. I mean, back when you were first started turkey hunting, I mean, you could go turkey hunting just about anywhere you wanted to, because nobody was turkey hunting. I mean, if you had a hunting camp, well, usually the neighbors next door, they didn't turkey hunt.
You could always get turkey rights somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they'd let you turkey hunt on their place and the next people's place. You could turkey hunt about anywhere you wanted to.
Well, maybe you could. I was following memberships.
Yeah.
People with a membership to a club.
Yeah.
And, because if you didn't have that, depending on whether you had to be wait to be invited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So unless you had your own property, your own lease or something, then you had a way to go. But if you didn't have that, then you had to wait to get invited to go to a turkey hunt or go with me this weekend. We're going to turkey hunt. So and then you go back to that place next year and it's all clear cut. So that's another problem.
Well, I know when I first started turkey hunting back in the 70s, I mean, there just wasn't hardly anybody turkey hunting. If he was a member in a club with 15 people, there might be one other person that turkey hunted, but usually maybe not even anybody turkey hunting.
Oh, Mike, I must have gone to the wrong club. Everybody in the whole club turkey hunting. In fact, I remember one morning this guy went out and killed a young gobbler, and he came back and told his buddy, he said, go down there to take this road and turn left and go down there about 100 yards and start calling. Well, next thing I know, he comes back with another young guy.
Yeah.
They whacking on them out of the same bunch. I mean, those young gobblers were easy to kill.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe we did hunt in different places. You were hunting down, in Clark County and all, but I was hunting up in Ringo County, and I'm just telling you, there was nobody already turkey hunting up there.
I had the same experience as Mike.
And the neighbors, they didn't turkey hunt. They didn't care if you went over on their property and turkey hunted. Now, deer hunting, everybody, there's quite a few people deer hunting, but as far as the turkey, they didn't care anything about the turkey. You could go over and hunt their property with no problem at all, but it's not that way anymore.
Hey, let's run to the break here. We're coming right back to wrap it up on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Our guest, Dude Marston. We're talking turkey calls, turkey hunting, and glad you're here. We're going to put some of these pictures up on Facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we're going to bring it to an end, but we're going to pick it back up. Dude, can I get a promise you're going to come back in and talk with us?
I'd love to. I don't know if I got much else to say.
I don't know, because I think...
The turkey stories that you could tell on some hunts, that's what we haven't done today. But on turkey hunts and some of the really good turkey hunts that you've been on, and I know you got a million of good turkey hunts.
You know, the best ones are the ones that you don't kill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it don't matter where you kill them or not. It's the hunt.
Yeah, I got plenty of those.
Also, when you come back, I know talking to your son about this, I want to hear some of the stories about the Delta. As a kid that grew up hunting the Delta, but I started in the 80s on through. I remember hearing the stories of what it was like even before I started, and I want to get some of those stories. You grew up hunting in that Delta, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a boat over at Roundtrees, which is, I don't know, you know what Roundtrees was?
No.
Probably don't. If you go across the bridge, at the Tensaw River Bridge, it was on your left.
Okay.
And it had one ditch going towards the Tensaw River and the other ditch going into Chocolata. So you put your boat on either side. Daddy had an old Stouter over there that we used, and we were duck hunting back in the early 50s over there. It was pretty good in those years. So had a Buccaneer 12 on a 14-foot Stouter, and we went from one end of that Delta to the other in that thing.
Sean, what we need to do is get Dude Marston on here and Ernest Ladd on here and tell some Delta stories.
I think we've already booked that show here coming up soon.
I'm telling you, that would be an awesome story to talk about the Delta back in the day.
Absolutely. All right, we will put that on the schedule going forward. Remember to check us out online, fmtalk1065.com. You can always get podcasts of this show and always grab the pictures that we're going to put up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/fmtalk1065outdoors. We'll see y'all next week. Prep Sports Report on the way next.